This is the American Greed Podcast, presented by CNBC. I'm Stacy Keach. In this episode of American Greed, they're foreign.
And when they were speaking, I had an accent. They said, "Do you know where we're from?"
Flirty.
The one very more taller, sophisticated. The other one was more cutesy, like the girl next door.
And fun-loving.
Very disarming. They compliment you. You're very, very nice. You're a nice American. Thanks.
They're bar girls, also known as B-girls. And once they get a hold of a man's attention...
The girls would straddle the guys, rub up against the guys, grind on the guys.
And his credit card, the game's over.
Every 3 minutes, $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, $800 tip, $700 tip.
But behind the smiles and the seduction, a scheme run by the Russian mob exploits Florida law.
Listen, guy, I'll bust your head right here. I'm a police officer, and I can do it.
And runs up a bar tab for the record books.
The limit of the credit card was the only thing that stopped them.
They exceeded the greed limit. Forget about Gecko. Greed is good. Greed is not so good. Eventually, you'll get nailed. I'm John Valeras. Happy St. Patrick's Day. It's been a magnificent day with temperatures well up there into the 60s. A pot of sunshine for sure. Big question is how long will it last? Details coming up.
For TV weatherman John Valeras, it's been a long winter of forecasting snow and ice. Now that the February sweeps ratings period is over, Valeras can relax a bit and enjoy his springtime ritual. Jetting off to Miami Beach.
Head to the beach, pool, got the workouts in, you play golf, come back, do a great dinner, you know, have a couple of drinks and just chill out. And you really just chilled and relaxed and had a good time.
Miami is an adult playground. A place where the normal rules of society don't always apply.
If you're a guy my age and you pull up to a club in a Ferrari with a 28-year-old stripper with a tattoo, they give you applause. You're not humiliated. I mean, I would be humiliated, right? But Miami's, man, you're going good.
On the night of March 27th, 2010, John Valeras leaves his room at the Fountain Blue Hotel and gets in a taxi heading south on Collins Avenue. He gets out at the Delano Hotel and heads in for sushi and drinks. Here's the thing about Valeras. Everywhere he goes, he's mobbed by fans. You can see it in this news clip.
Who's on that phone?
I'm talking to my mother. Tell her I'm in front of you.
I was always accessible. I grew up blue collar on Long Island and, you know, playing baseball. And so, you know, I was a very approachable guy.
Even here in Miami, people recognize John Valeras. Some Philadelphians on spring break see him and say, "Hey, John, what's the weather going to be?" The bartender is also from Philly. Two women at the side of the bar take note of this banter.
And then they came up from behind and said, "Hey, you're a weather presenter in this country." And I looked at him, I said, "I don't know about him, a weather presenter." And he goes, "Yeah, he's a weatherman, he's a meteorologist." He goes, "Oh, that's very interesting."
Valeras says the women appear to be in their mid-20s and they're well-dressed.
Miami could be over the top quite a bit. South Beach, they were not that way. They were sophisticated. I had a European look to them. And when they were speaking, I had an accent. They said, "Do you know where we're from?" And I said, "Poland." They said, "No, Estonia." I said, "Oh, okay." And then we started talking.
Valeras, who is drinking Pinot Grigio, orders a round for his new friends. One is named Marina, the other, Anna.
They were visiting. They found most Americans not nice. You seem to be an exception to the rule. You're very nice and friendly to us. And I said, "Why wouldn't I be? You know, I think most Americans are nice. I mean, you come up to me, you're talking to me, I'm going to be nice to you." I said, you're not yelling at me for a bad forecast. Remember saying that, you know, I don't have to duck. I'm going to be nice. I'm in a good mood. I'm in Miami and I'm enjoying some food and a couple of drinks at the bar.
Valeris says that after a drink, he heads out to the bar by the pool. The two girls join him. John insists that the girls never offer to have sex. On the other hand, he says, he is open to whatever the night might bring.
I wasn't at, you know, a bingo church. I was at South Beach, Miami. I'm a single guy. It may cross your mind. It could cross your mind. It's normal to cross your mind. It's not a crime in thinking that you may be getting together or maybe not. Who knows? I don't know, maybe 10 minutes elapsed, a few minutes elapsed, and they came by and said, do you want to do a shot with us? I said, no, I don't want to do a shot. You know, I don't want to do a shot. I'm having Pinot Grigio. I'm on my lining up for a shot, right? And I said, no.
But the girls are persistent.
But then they came over again. And they said, you're not doing a shot with us? And then one came behind me and started rubbing my shoulder, please do just a shot with us. Let's just have a shot. You know, do it for, you know, our country and your country. I said, oh, okay, I'll do a shot. And then they like rubbing it. And the other one poured a shot down my throat. I said, I did the shot, okay? You know what? There's not too much that goes on after that that I can truly remember.
One thing he does remember, the women suggest they go to an art auction to benefit victims of the earthquake in Haiti.
I said, all right, I'll stop in. I remember getting in the cab, and the only thing I remember after that was someone holding my arm. I felt that, and like signing things.
At one point, he remembers passing out.
And then they got me up. They said, are you okay? You know, yeah, whoa, you know, I remember saying, whoa, you light drinker. I said, yeah. And they said, oh, you bit on the painting. I said, what? I bit on a painting. I said, okay. Yeah, here's the painting. Come on, we're going to take it back to your hotel. And I'm looking at this painting, go, I remember, but I said, I checked for receipts. I wanted to see, A, what I paid for the painting, and if it's going to be a charity write-off, I got to have the receipt.
There are no receipts to be found.
And then I noticed, as I was checking the drawer, my sunglasses were missing. And, you know, expensive sunglasses. Then I thought something was up. I had the painting there, sunglasses. I said, they took me.
They took him, all right. But the B-girls aren't finished with him yet.
Yeah, they're really, really good. You know, and they're the best. They're the best of the best.
After waking up with a throbbing head and a mysterious painting at the foot of his bed, John Valeris is a little confused.
I don't know exactly what happened because you don't remember anything, but you know there's a painting there, there's no receipt, your sunglasses are missing, you're up, you're in your full clothes, but you have, you know, red wine on you and you have blanks. I said, they took me.
But if they took him, there's this curiosity. His wallet is there with all his credit cards. And then later, after a swim, he sees there's a message on his hotel phone.
Hello, it's Marina. So sorry. We took your sunglasses by accident. We hope you like the painting. And they left their number. They're saying they have their my sunglasses and they made a mistake. I called them back. I said, hey, what the heck? You know, where's the receipt? What's the painting? Oh, I said, I bid on this painting. Oh, you bid very heavily.
Valeris can't remember bidding at all. But this much he does know. He has an acute case of buyer's regret, and he wants their help to return the painting.
Okay, if you don't like it, we'll return it to the vendor, and we'll get your we'll return your sunglasses. Okay.
So, what exactly is Bolaris thinking at this moment?
You know, listen, everything was there, my wallet was there. I mean, if they were going to rip me off, wouldn't they come rip me off? My wallet's there. So what kind of a red flag are you going to have with that? You're not.
So John agrees to meet the girls again. He says he simply wants his stuff returned. But Playboy writer Pat Jordan says it's only natural that some other motivation could be in the mix.
You wake up smelling a perfume with two red lips, you think you did well, and you don't remember it, though. So maybe you go back the second night.
John meets the girls once again at the Delano, at the same pool bar.
And they say, hey, John. I said, okay, came over. I go, hey, we got your sunglasses. So sorry, they look like our sunglasses. We were a little drunk. We had a good time. It was fun.
They drink more Pinot Grigio and make plans to return the dreaded painting. At one point, Valera says he leaves the girls to go to the bathroom. He believes they take that opportunity to spike his drink, because after that, things get very blurry. He remembers getting into a cab and heading to the nightclub where, they say, he bought the painting.
When I walked in, the only thing I remember is a bar and a person handing a purse to Marina. That's it. There's no way that from Pinot Grigio that I'll take that kind of a ride, you know, or like, no. Total gone. Total blackout.
The next day is Groundhog Day, a painful replay. But this morning, there's a ray of light. The painting is gone. It looks like his new friends from Estonia have made good on their promise.
And I remember they came back to the room and they took the painting. That was it.
Bolaris feels sick, much worse than the day before. But he manages to get on a plane back to Philadelphia. And when he shuffles home, dead tired, he gets a call from American Express. They say his credit card has a boatload of suspicious charges.
Originally, they said $27,000 and change, and then they called back and they upped it to $43,670. I said, where'd this transaction take place? They said at a place called the Caviar Bar. I said, I don't know what the Caviar Bar is. Obviously, this is a mistake. I just knew something went on with my credit card. And then it came to me, it was them. I called Marina. I said, hey, and she said, hi, how are you? I said, listen, what did you guys do? I said, what you did was a crime, I do believe. If you use my credit card without my authorization, that's a crime. Oh no, we would never do anything like that. I said, no. What did you do? I actually said to them, who are you working for?
Bolaris files a fraud claim with Amex and refuses to pay the charges. To his surprise, as he tells it, Amex takes the merchant's side.
They were horrible. The chief investigator said to me, I've seen this 1,000 times. You're acting like a big shot and you're spending money. And I said, wait a minute. You've seen this 1,000 times on my account?
Bolaris asks for proof of the transactions and the credit card company faxes receipts to him at work.
And I called her back and said, that's not my signature. And I said, look at the timestamps. Every 3 minutes, $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, $800 tip, $700 tip.
He's just barely exaggerating. The money trail shows that Bolaris' first transaction at the Caviar Bar is at 3:21 in the morning. He's charged $1,888 for Pomme d'Or champagne. It retails for about $100. 15 minutes later, he's charged $2,495 for a bottle of Cristal. Gratuity is $499. 19 minutes later, another charge for just over $5,000.
I hate champagne. Okay, I'll do the toast at a wedding, but I don't like champagne.
39 minutes later, he apparently buys the painting, spelled here panting, for $2,480. Of course, that's before gratuity. And that's just the first night. The second night, Bolaris starts earlier and does even more damage. $27,194 in just one night.
I would have been dead.
According to Bolaris, the fraud investigator says the caviar bar's owner, Stan Pavlenko, is a legitimate businessman. American Express declined to speak with American Greed, citing privacy concerns. But Bolaris believes the Amex investigator was fooled by Pavlenko.
She goes, I have a photograph, you know, of you having a good time. I go, oh, yeah, what is this photograph? She goes, well, it's you sitting down with lipstick, an imprint of lips on your cheek. Let me see this picture. I said, how'd you get this picture? Stan sent it. I said, why would Stan send pictures of me if he wasn't planning on doing something? Don't you see that, I said? Don't you see that your Stan was setting me up? This is a crime. I'm telling you it's a crime. Nope. Case closed. Hung up the phone. I could never get back to her again.
Bolaris makes calls to the police in Miami Beach. And that's where Officer Luis King comes in. The Miami Beach PD allows officers to work off-duty as security for nightclubs. And the Miami branch of the FBI, which is investigating fraud in nightclubs, knows Officer King has a history of undercover work. The FBI sees a way in.
They had told me briefly that they believe the club is involved somehow in fraud, possibly drugging clients there.
The FBI persuades King to go undercover and find out what's going on in five clubs owned by Russian businessmen. They call it Operation Caviar Beach. A few days later, King meets with one of the owners, Isaac Feldman. Feldman sells condos in Sunny Isles Beach, known as Little Moscow. In this YouTube video he posted, Feldman celebrates his birthday at the office. Now he's branching out into entertainment. Feldman tells King the Stars Lounge is a high-end private club that employs young girls to reel in customers.
Immediately working Vice in here in Miami Beach, I recognized that right off it's called B-Girls.
B-Girls, also known as Bar Girls. Working undercover, Officer King gets a front row seat to the wildest show on South Beach. In August 2010, Miami Beach Police Officer Luis King goes undercover at Stars Lounge. He plays the role of an off-duty cop doing security. And a camera hidden in his key fob captures images which are reviewed every night by the FBI. One of the first people he meets is the man who plays the heavy, Alec Oleg Simchuk.
He told me that there's not going to be any prostitution, that he ran clubs in Estonia and Latvia, and that he was going to run it exactly the same way here.
Simchuk tells King his team of bar girls, or B-girls, doesn't need to sell sex. They can make more money selling overpriced liquor. And it's safer. Simchuk says he's killing it in Latvia, and Miami is ripe for the picking.
They were very successful. The cheapest bottle of wine they had went for $129. And those we found at Publix for $3 for a $35 bottle of champagne. They would sell them for $2,500. The most expensive one I saw them sell was came out to $17,000.
The Russian owners love having a cop around. They just assume he's corrupt, because that's how it worked in the old country. Still, the bosses keep their distance at first.
They didn't open up to me right off the bat. The girls had more contact with them.
One way King earns goodwill is by letting the girls use his iPad. And they love to take pictures.
And all that was to be able to gather that information and to try to show what was going on inside the clubs, and also to be able to identify the girls later on.
The captain of the team is one of the B girls who took John Valeris for a ride. Her name is Marina, a 24-year-old from Latvia.
Marina, she was a heavy drinker, and she could hold her liquor. She's having a toast of vodka. They love vodka. She knew how to party. She could dance for the guys. She can get the guys motivated and to get them up there dancing so that they would drink. And she would get them partying. And she knew how to bring out the party animal in pretty much all the guys.
Anna, a 25-year-old from Latvia, is the other B-girl who duped Valeris. She's also one of the leaders of the pack.
But she was extremely good. She got another client for close to $40,000 also.
Albert Tokolov is another partner in the scheme. He runs the bar and recruits the girls. King says 50 girls come and go during his 8-month undercover operation.
Her name is Victoria, Christina, Anastasia.
Most are from Latvia and Estonia, and are in their late teens or early 20s.
One of the things that they would try to recruit the girls was that they weren't coming for prostitution purposes, that they were coming to entertain gentlemen, to bring them to the club as promoters.
This B-girl looks innocent in a Minnie Mouse sweatshirt when she poses on a plane leaving Latvia. When she arrives in Miami, Louise King is the first American she meets.
Pick them up at the airport and help them get set up. When they arrived, I would take them to Walgreens or one of the local stores so that they can buy an air mattress. And most times they would buy the queen size so that two of them could sleep on one mattress.
If sharing a cheap mattress doesn't sound like the glamorous life on the Miami party scene, that's because it isn't.
It was Oleg's organization that paid for the flight for the girl. They would buy a plane ticket for them to come over. They would hold that over their head in that they would not buy a ticket for them to fly back unless they worked and produced and earned money for them to fly back. Otherwise, they wouldn't buy them a ticket. They would be stranded here.
King says the transformation of the young women is unbelievable.
This is Anastasia, before she became involved with Oleg Simchuk's group. She was very shy when she first started. By April, she was a totally different individual. She was on the wild side by then. These two were 18 years old. They were both from Russia. Oleg Simchuk used to like trying to take these two girls home on a regular basis. And they did not like having to go with him. But when they would hear that Oleg was coming into the club, they would take off running outside the club. That's how much they dislike having to go home with Oleg.
Because the B-girls don't like to be prey. At heart, they're apex predators. In Miami Beach, when the clock strikes midnight, it's time for the B-girls to go to work.
This is Ocean Drive. This is the main area of entertainment here on Miami Beach. The Clevelander in this area was the main hunting ground that I would bring the girls out for them to find the clients. Also, just right down the street, Mangoes.
The B-girls hunt in teams of two, and they have a keen sense of when to pounce.
One of the key things I would ask them, what are you looking for? Are you looking for a watch or what are you looking for? And one of the things that the girls kept on coming back, they said that you can always tell if a guy has money by their shoes. If it's high quality, extremely expensive shoes, then they got money.
The girls move in, lavishing attention on their Mark. If he's with friends, they try to separate him, divide and conquer. And they tease him, playing on his sense of machismo.
They would love to hit on a man's ego and tell him, let's take some shots.
And the other one poured a shot down my throat and said, I did the shot, okay?
But the girls were served water and the men were served vodka. And they were masters of having the clients drink an incredible amount of vodka in a short period of time.
Once the guy is good and liquored up, they say they know a place around the corner that's quiet where they can talk. They're master manipulators of the male psyche, says Pat Jordan, who wrote about the B-girls for Playboy.
They're just looking for a guy who thinks he's a player. You know, they're like a Playboy cartoon. Two gorgeous women going up to some nerdy guy in glasses at a bar and saying he's the hottest thing they've ever seen. A real player would know right off. I mean, me, two bar girls coming up to me? I'd say, what do you want, a grandfather? You know? But it's got to be a guy who thinks he's a player.
And that self-delusion only grows stronger as the night gets longer.
Their main success is when they would start actually coming back in would be between 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning. Some of them can barely walk as they come into the club, and they're prime targets at that point.
King takes American Greed to Washington Avenue, just off the main drag. The Russians run three clubs within a few blocks, Tangier Club, Stars Lounge, and Steel Toast.
This is the main strip that they would pick the clubs to work at. Here on Washington Avenue, they had it both here, right across the street they had another one, and earlier the Stars Lounge was just one block down further south.
As seen from the hidden camera, the B-girls pretend that they don't know the bouncer checking IDs, even though he's their boss. Once inside, the Mark finds that the club is largely empty. It's just him, a bartender, and a few women.
They would dance for him. You had a lot of touching. The girls allowed themselves to be touched by the clients pretty much as they wanted to.
They promised a lot to the guys, whether it was just company or just talking to them, or they promised them to have sex with them later on that night.
The B-girls take 20% of all the booze they sell, and it's absurdly overpriced. The Mark doesn't know it, but each swipe of his card can cost $2,000, $3,000, even $5,000. The B-girls are so delirious with greed that they'll sell anything, according to one story that King says Marina tells them.
At one point, she was telling me that she had gotten some guy out of Philadelphia. It was some TV guy. She was telling me that she got him for $48,000 and sold him a picture that we used to have on the wall. And she pointed to a bare spot that you could still see the picture frame right there on the wall. And she was so proud of that.
Said, I bid on this painting. Oh, you bid very heavily.
The girls took pride, and they kept on saying this thing. They took pride in the fact that they could screw over a guy without having to screw him. They were so proud of that. And they kind of looked down on other girls, and they said, why are these girls prostituting when they can make just as much or more money taking advantage of guys?
By 4 or 5 in the morning, most men in Stars Lounge can't even see straight. It's the perfect time to present the bill. And that's Marina's job. She's got a little trick to separate men from their money. She covers up zeros with a thumb and tells them where to sign.
Then the other girls who brought them in would try to distract them by caressing them, by kissing them, and they would do anything they could to distract and pull their attention away from what the actual bill was. And they were extremely successful at that.
Occasionally, the B-girls have to take control.
One guy in particular that I remember, he was so drunk, they were getting buckets of ice water and throwing it on top of him One girl sat on his chest and just started slapping him to wake him up so he could sign his bills.
But not all the men are slobbering suckers. Sometimes the B-girls bring back a guy who can really hold his liquor. Or perhaps a new girl is clumsy in her sleight of hand. In those cases, the mark senses a trap.
The first night that I was there, I was in plain clothes, and an individual took off running.
No, 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 no.
Hey, 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 come here.
And I had to chase him down, threaten him, and threaten to handcuff him.
Police officer. Hey, I'm a police officer. Come over here, guy. Get down on the ground. Get down on the ground. I'll beat your head in. Get down on the ground. Turn around. I'm a police officer.
Doesn't matter.
Yes, it does.
Yes, in Florida, it does matter. The Russians cleverly exploit Florida Statute 509.151, more commonly known as the Innkeeper's Law.
The Innkeeper's Law in South Florida prevents tourists coming down and ripping off restaurants and stuff by running out on the tab and going, you know, hopping the next plane back to Ohio.
Running out on a bill of more than $300 is a felony in Florida.
It was a very convincing argument to get somebody to pay.
Now put your hand behind your back. You gonna take care of that bill?
Let me out.
No! Listen, guy, I'll bust your head right here. I'm a police officer and I can do it.
All right, let me out.
Okay?
Let me out.
No.
Just let me out.
No.
Please, let me settle it.
Let's settle it. You gonna go settle it?
Yeah, yeah.
Give me your wallet. We're gonna walk back and settle it.
I would tell him, listen, your bill is $5,000. You either pay the $5,000 now or you're going to be paying the $5,000 when you post bond. Which is it going to be? On more than one occasion, I had people yelling at me, calling me corrupt. And it was just part of the undercover deal.
It's a clever fraud. And one B-girl tells King she makes as much in 2 weeks as she does in a year back home. The lion's share goes to the owners. Just one pair of high-performing B-girls can bring in $250,000 a month for the club.
Oleg Simchuk would buy cars. He had a BMW, he had a Hummer. Albert Takalov purchased a new vehicle for his wife. They would go on trips. They would spend as much money as they could.
The Russians tell themselves they're in the entertainment business. And it's true that they follow the number one rule of showbiz. Always leave them wanting more. Because once the cards maxed out, the show's over.
There was one guy in particular that I remembered. He got taken, I think, for about $5,500. The girls actually dumped him inside the club, and they went out through the back door. He hung around that club for the longest period of time, hoping that they would come back. And I'm telling him, the girls are gone. And they kept on telling me, he had to get them out of here so that the girls can bring new guys in. But he refused to leave, thinking they would come back.
Drunk, broke, and dejected, the men are kicked to the curb. And sometimes they quite literally lose their shirts.
The girls, as a trophy, would love to take the men's shirt. I don't know why. If they got a really good client and they got them for a lot of money, they would take their shirts as a trophy.
After 8 months of working undercover, Officer Luis King has earned the trust of the Russians running the B-girls scam. King makes speeding tickets and parking citations disappear. And he fixes any hassle with the city of Miami Beach. Albert Takalov and Alex Simchuk trust him so much, they make King a partner, entitled to 5% of the profits.
And what that did was that opened up the books to me. I got to see it.
The records show that hundreds of men have been victimized and defrauded of more than $2 million. With this key evidence in hand, the FBI decides it's time to put the B-girls on ice. But how should they bring all the players together at one time? King has an idea. The B-girls recently threw a 21st birthday party for him.
That actually gave me the idea to when they finally, to bring them all together at the end was to throw another party.
K King tells the gang he's getting promoted to sergeant. It's great news. With more power, he can do even more for them. They stage a promotion party for King.
We ordered stone crabs and a big spread for all the girls.
And when everyone's assembled, King sends a text to his handlers at the bureau.
And 5 minutes later, the FBI walks in the door. And it was over.
The bosses and the B-girls are taken by surprise and arrested without incident.
And I know before the raid, I said to one of the feds, I said, can you do me a favor? When you go in, because they told me they were going in, tell Marina that the weatherman says hello. Because they bragged about what they did to me. They got greedy.
After filing a civil lawsuit against American Express, John Belaris eventually gets his money back. But his fight costs him much more than $43,000. The Philadelphia media goes nuts with the story. Belaris even merits his own cartoon.
And the way the press make things look, like it was called the hangover, the real-life hangover, and making it look like I just had a fun time in Miami.
Pat Jordan writes a piece for Playboy. Belaris doesn't like it. And his boss at the TV station really hates it.
Your embarrassment to the industry, your embarrassment to me, your embarrassment to everyone. You should be embarrassed in front of your daughter. You're an embarrassing individual to me.
Belaris appeals to a bigwig at the network. He pleads that he's the victim of a crime and deserves a second chance. Belaris says this executive is sympathetic to his plight, but still believes he has no option other than to let him go.
John, when you decide to go to Miami and not be with your little girl and hang out with Russian hookers, what do you think we're going to do? And he goes, it's all perception. And that was it.
I don't think there was any call from Philadelphia TV weather viewers to have John Belaris fired. He was a weatherman. He wasn't Bill Murray in Groundhog Day, you know, who thought he was better than what he was doing. John liked the weather.
Belaris says his lost weekend ultimately costs him $2 million in lost wages, and he believes he's been blackballed.
No one gave him the opportunity. I mean, it's over. I mean, there's just, you know, I've come to realization I'm not getting back into the TV industry because there's, you know, as they say, crickets.
19 defendants are charged with multiple counts of wire fraud and money laundering. 13 defendants plead guilty, including Marina Tersina and Anna Kilimatova. The B-girls do a short time in prison and then are deported to their home countries. Alex Simchuk flees to Russia. He lands on the FBI's fugitive list, where he remains for over a year. On October 10, 2012, in a federal courthouse in Miami, the trial begins against Albert Takaloff and four others. But where is Alex Simchuk? In a bit of courtroom drama, the former fugitive makes an appearance as the star witness against his former comrades. And he has a harrowing tale of life on the run. He testifies that while smoking a cigarette in St. Petersburg, a man approaches him and says, good people from Miami don't want you to testify. You have a beautiful wife. Stay at home. His leg is snapped and the bone is broken. Simchuk testifies that despite the clear warning, I don't want to be on the run all my life. I want to put everything behind me. Alex Simchuk pleads guilty and gets 3 years in prison. At trial, one defendant is acquitted, but the other three are found guilty of wire fraud and money laundering. Stanislav Pavlenko gets 6.5 years in prison. Isaac Feldman, 8. And Albert Takaloff gets 12 years in prison.
If it wasn't for Belaris being actually pretty tough and insistent, they would still be operating.
You know, it's like the guy who sees a murder, everybody sees the murder, and nobody will testify because they're afraid. And one guy stands up in court, puts his life on the line, and testifies. John didn't know whether the Russian mob was a real serious Russian mob, you know, that was going to whack him or anything.
It took a lot of courage by Belarus to come forth, because he knew what people were going to say about him, that he was going to be ridiculed. And my hat goes off to him.
Though they hail from the Baltic states, the B-girls are masters of American greed. They're experts at exploiting a man's naive belief that tonight is his lucky night.
If you go to South Beach thinking you might get laid, I'll guarantee you you'll get screwed.
Thanks for listening to the American Greed Podcast, presented by CNBC. I'm Stacy Keach.